This is the Registry Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Perspectives Podcast, where we explore the stories behind some of the most impactful leaders across the commercial real estate spectrum. Today, we're joined by Joy Silver, Chief Strategy Officer for Communities Housing Opportunities. Since 1984, CHOC has been a leader in creating healthier communities and providing housing solutions and support services for youth, families, and seniors. They've empowered countless low-income individuals and families to build better lives. Joy brings deep expertise to the world of community development, and her leadership has expanded CHOC's impact, allowing it to help more people than ever. Today, Joy will discuss the inner workings of a community development organization, the challenges and rewards of this work, and her vision for the future of housing. Enjoy the show!
Joy, good morning. How are you?
Very good. Good morning. Glad to be here with you.
Thank you for joining us. Where do we find you today? Where are you?
Well, I'm in Palm Springs, California, and that is where our Southern California office is. So it's beautiful and it's heaven, and I wouldn't really want to be anywhere else.
By way of introduction, can you tell us a bit about you and your path to this role? In essence, how did you get to where you are today?
I want to tell you, Vlad, that this is my favorite subject. Housing, communities, this has been my favorite subject for many, many years. So I'm really happy to be speaking about the subject with you. My background is an interesting background in that there are several parts to it as to how I got here. I started out, and I would tell you this, at 3 years old, I was the kid that was screaming, "That's not fair." And so what does that mean when you're 3 years old and you're saying that's not fair? It basically means you want to see things different and you want more people included and you want more people at the table to be able to make decisions. And there I was at 3 years old touting that very philosophy, maybe not from such a sophisticated level, but okay, I was talking about it. There's another thing that happened too. I think I was maybe 6 years old and in first grade. When I went to first grade, I could already read. See Spot Run, forget it, I'm reading Nancy Drew and encyclopedias. So I was a bad kid.
Right.
I was, you know, I was playing, I wasn't following along. I would read the book in 5 seconds and then but what I would do, Vlad, is I would draw little communities and little towns and little cities and I would plan them out. Now this is in first grade. And sure enough, today, what am I doing? I'm planning out communities and making villages and making things accessible for the people who live there. So it's quite an interesting trajectory. Now, I didn't go directly from first grade into housing, mind you. I even had a stint in the entertainment field where I was a bass player, okay, in a rock band, but we won't talk about that particularly today, but maybe we should. Even that, Vlad, was about changing the world. Because yeah. I thought, you know, everybody knows who the Beatles are. And this is my thinking back then. And so they had the biggest stage and here we see Taylor Swift doing that exact thing today, right? She's using her position in order to make the changes that she believes in. And so that was my thinking then, but I'm no Taylor Swift. So I went into medical services and I realized that housing was part of health services, and that you can have all these health provision of services you want, but if the stability for people's lives wasn't there, the outcomes for them were not going to be good. And so I started out with senior housing and then moved into this arena because there are options for people who have money, and they have more options, obviously, than people who don't. And so I thought, but that isn't helpful for people who are working, working class, have incomes, but cannot find housing. And a good deal of our citizens of the United States, and it's about 50%, are what we call rent burdened. And that means they're paying more than the traditional 30% of their income
Sure.
for housing. And this is across the country. So what can I do? I was able to put all of my wanting to move things into a better place into housing, attainable housing, and ultimately affordable housing. So that is kind of my trajectory for coming on board. I was lucky enough to run into the organization Community Housing Opportunities Corporation, and their mission is about increasing the available supply of affordable housing and improving the life of very low, low, and moderate income households. And this is critically important because before this time period, public housing was seen as something that didn't really have much design. Some of the design, I call it cell block 8. They look like prisons right. rather than, yeah. And the biggest difference there in what Chalk does is it designs things that anybody, that almost any income level would be lucky to live in. And maybe the very rich would not want to be in a community like that because they don't really want anybody around them. But seriously, the design is of a level that any income level would be happy to be in. So this was a really important thing to me.
Yeah. So tell us about the organization. You know, when was it formed? What does it do? How would you, you know, put yourself in the spectrum of, you know, affordable housing builders sort of across the West Coast? And, you know, how are you guys different?
Well, we're small because we take each community and we accentuate the community vision. We're not big developers that put up massive 300-400 units of attainable or affordable housing, but the history of the organization comes from its ability to execute the vision of the communities that it's in. So when we're looking at places to construct and develop, we also take into consideration, actually sit with the community and see what is their design, what are their design needs, how does it fit in with the aesthetic of the community, how does it fold into the overall vision for cities, and having those partnerships with cities and communities to do that. So our CEO calls it kind of a boutique affordable housing developer rather than some of the larger organizations that do similar things but on a grander scale.
Will you also partner with some other master developers and kind of come in as an affordable housing, you know, component? Is that, I know some do that, but I'm just, you know, kind of curious if that's your approach, or will you sort of look at, you know, standalone projects only?
I think if we were to partner, we haven't. But if we were to partner with that kind of developer that you're talking about, then it would have to be a mission and culture match, because there has to be an understanding that the outcome of the people who live there, that is the point of building. And some, certainly in the for-profit world, they're looking to have profit. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing, but it is not the driving mission of what we do. Ours is about meeting the needs of the residents and making sure that more people get the opportunity to start the process of gaining equity in the society around them and participating in an equitable way. And so that's really different. So yes, we would do a partnership like that if the cultures and the missions and the visions matched.
Yeah, makes sense. And geographically, Joy, where are you guys?
We are in Northern California in about a radius around Fairfield. I think it's more than 100 miles, maybe not pretty close to it. And here in Palm Springs, we're 100 miles in radius to Palm Springs at the center of the spoke. So these are the areas right now that we are looking to develop and create communities in.
Yeah. So about those communities, tell us, you know, how many has the organization, you know, developed so far? How many units? Tell us a little bit about that.
I believe the number is about 1,400 units, but it comes out to 28 communities in total, with 26 of them in Northern California, and two of them are new ones, just about to cut the ribbon. Here in the Coachella Valley, and we're looking now at what our next what our next partnerships might look like. And those partnerships right now, we're looking at some nonprofit organizations to partner with. And we're looking at what's available and where we want to be in the Coachella Valley. In Northern California, we're looking at preservation as well. And what is preservation? A lot of affordable housing stock goes out of commission, as it were, in certain moments in their financing. And so what we're looking to do is to preserve the units that are already identified as attainable affordable housing and keep it there and move it forward from there. So we're looking for the opportunities for preservation of affordable housing stock in Northern California.
Yeah. So you, mentioned you have a couple of upcoming things. Are there any projects that you'd like to highlight, you know, things that are of note kind of happening right now?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. I would say that if I looked at Chalk and its moment of expansion, really, into the Coachella Valley, we've planted our flag, as it were, into Palm Springs and then into the city of Coachella. And the one in Palm Springs is called the Monarch. And the Monarch's ribbon cutting is 2 weeks from now. So it's happening soon. And the Monarch is really, it's an amazing tip of the hat. It's even more than a tip of the hat. It's actually using the design elements that are of the aesthetic of Palm Springs and what Palm Springs is known for. And Palm Springs is known for its modernism. There's an international modernism that goes on here, and the architectural ideas and iterations of those architects that were working in the 50s and in the 70s. So what we have are butterfly roofs, which is certainly a feature of modernism, and that kind of architecture folds very nicely. And this was what was really amazing. It folds nicely into the community that it's sitting in, and we sit next door to the very famous Wexler Steel Homes. And when they saw, because a lot of people have what they call NIMBY, as you know, not in my backyard, right? When they saw the design, this community saw the design of this community, they were amazingly supportive because it folds so well into the design of the Wexler Steel Homes, which are historic and certainly a feature of Palm Springs. And so that was an amazing part of it. And then what we added into the Monarch butterfly roofs was a splash pad for families and children to play in the splash pad. And the splash pad's design is of a monarch butterfly, right? So the color scheme is monarch, are like the wings of the monarch butterfly. And we also use landscaping to attract monarch butterflies. So it's kind of an all-in-one feature that really distinguishes it far beyond what other people do when it comes to affordable housing. Mostly affordable housing, if it's a large, as you were talking about, a partnership with a for-profit, they'll have a nonprofit arm in order to get better concessions from cities, right, and more density and things. So it's more about that. But ours in particular is about making sure that people who are of low income can attain a life that allows them and the children who are living in those communities to get that foot into that equitable world where they have the options that they didn't and opportunities that they hadn't had. So that's an amazing thing about the Monarch. In the Coachella Valley, in the city of Coachella, which is almost on the other side of the valley, we have built Placita Dolores Huerta, who was at our groundbreaking, by the way, 90 years old and full of fire. She must have been a very frightening young woman because she sure as hell has more energy than I do today. Heck, she's 90. My God. But that has a very villagey feel that folds into the way that they have renovated and redesigned their downtown area. And there's lots of Spanish, colonial, Moorish, almost Pueblo. All of these design elements are in our design, which follows into the downtown area. And the fold in is so beautiful that you can see it doesn't, it's not a haphazard plan. It is a plan that is inclusive by its nature. And so this is what we're building there. And that that ribbon cutting will be in May.
Yeah, interesting. So when you when you talk about the design of your you know developments, it does sound like you guys spend a lot of time sort of trying to figure out how it fits into the neighborhood, into the kind of language of the region. I am curious also in terms of, you know, architects will call this, you know, programming, you know, but what amenities, what other things inside those communities you think are valuable and important now, especially sort of coming out of this, you know, global pandemic and kind of a, you know, realignment of how we do things and where we do them and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, the critical and in essence, it's really what distinguishes chalk in a lot of ways, some of the questions that you're asking right now. In the amenities, we have what's called community impact services, which many communities call resident services. But it has youth and family initiatives, resident services programs. We have field students who intern there. So it's kind of an all-around thing. Federal Work Study America Reads programs, financial literacy. We offer all of that in the communities as well. And that that is led by our Vice President of Community Impact Services. So she does that. So, and you know, I didn't mention this to you, but this is, I think, is important too. Both communities, and most likely every community we do after this, you know, we're the sunshine place. I mean, there's a lot of sunshine here. It's probably 350 days of sunshine, you know, and, at least. And so all of the communities have solar solar panels and have the energy brought in over the parking elements. So we're running on green and solar energy there in the communities. And I think that's a big feature of what the way attainable affordable housing is going to be from this point on. And so we're actually first. In fact, we're the first affordable housing community to come out of the ground in Palm Springs in 14 years.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. 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 Very.
Yeah.
Very
so
impressive.
You can see that the innovation of that. So those are some of the services. The other thing that puts us in a different or distinguishes us from other affordable housing organizations, we also have an arm in our divisions. We have divisions and subsidiaries. And one of the subsidiaries of our nonprofit is Sterling. And Sterling Management is a property manager. And I say this in knowing that not all developers are property managers. But why is that important? Okay, it's important because if you are the developer, and I've been in this situation even before I got into affordable housing, if you're going to be the property manager, you're going to make sure that whatever you're developing is not going to bring you issues. It's not a one and done. Okay, we built it, we're out of here, we never see these people again. But for us, we maintain it, and we're property managers afterwards, and we are part of the community impact services. So we stay with those communities so that it is integrated into the best service that we can possibly provide to those residents. So not only are we doing construction, but we're also part of that community effort.
Yeah, and maintaining it as well. And by maintaining it, don't just mean the physical aspect of it, but maintaining the community too, which is
that's right.
Probably a...
Yeah,
you know, more maybe even more important, right?
It is.
I want to switch gears a little bit because you mentioned something about building equity and opportunities. We chatted about this a few days ago when you talked a bit about how difficult it is for some of these families to sort of move economically upwards, if you will, right? Let's talk about that a little bit. What is your kind of experience in terms of the families that typically get into an affordable housing project? What happens? What happens if they start making more money? What happens if their kids want to move out, have the opportunity to move out? Is there kind of a I don't know if you want to call it a typical story, but some anecdotes in terms of that you have found are interesting, and maybe how we can improve this.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there. I mean, the crisis is so big that no organization can do it all, and certainly not alone. Okay, so you kind of have to pick your focus, right? And but what happens in affordable housing is that it is built and developed to meet the needs of people who are living at 30, 50, 60% of average median income. But if you're over that amount, then you no longer qualify to live in that community. So in essence, if you're at 30% AMI and you make more money, and the mix that is required by regulation allows there's a space, and your income rises, and you haven't exceeded the 60% of AMI, you can do that, given that you're in that range of the required mix. However, if you're over that 60%, then you will not meet your certification regulations, and
Right.
these are done every year. So what's the problem there? Well, there's a pro and a con to it. The pro is that you're serving the community at its level where people need the most help, okay? But the con to it is it's not encouraging the residents who are living there to move to that next level of, say, 80 to 120% AMI, which is also a range where housing does not exist that is attainable for people. So you're dealing with people at the low rent income, but they're programmatically, we're missing that next piece from the 80% to the 120%. And then there's the issue of seniors too. I mean, there's certainly not enough affordable senior housing for the size of the population that seniors have now entered into. And so there become issues there too. And personally, I would like to see us do our next community development in senior affordable housing, because I think the need is overwhelming there as well. So that is some of the challenges of that. What I would like to see ultimately is that, well, let's go back to the kids who are living in the communities now. So these kids who are in the community 30, 50, 60% AMI, they are the ones who will benefit, because they're now living in a stable community. They're able to have the opportunities of education and the things that they might not have had if this community was not available. And when they get to a certain age and they're ready to move on, they have had the background of more options and more opportunities than their parents have had. And we always hope that our kids will have more opportunities than we have, but I'm not sure the way things are today that that's necessarily true. But still, stability in the home, and in having a home, and in having a good place to live also gives us a better outcome in health and in education and in the ability to move upwards in the economic strategy and to create that equity. So that's what I see there.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, and that's a very good point. A lot of sort of affordable housing, it does seem when you look at it that way, like it's built not necessarily in a silo, but in a way where it sort of fits a certain need, meaning like this one property is for this group of people, but as they move on or earn more or things like that, where do they go from that point on? Have you seen broader communities built? Is that something you guys would like to do, where there is an opportunity to sort of move between kind of these, segments of affordability?
Well, now you're talking about my dream project, Vlad. My dream project. I'm going to tell you, I'm 68 and I'm still an idealist. Okay. So when I say my dream project, understand that it might not be so practical, but and what makes it not practical and needs so much work to, pragmatically speaking, it's always going to be in the financing and the programs and who's going to be supportive of it. But let's pretend that none of that exists just for a second, because I see myself as a pragmatic idealist, okay? So my dream project is that we can actually do mixed income, mixed use communities. And in those mixed use, mixed income communities, we can, and this again, it is held by its finance. I mean, when you have a piece of land that usually serves as the collateral for financing, right? So you have a certain amount where this is going to be about this thing. However, if there was an ability to be able to have senior housing, affordable housing across the street, so grandma didn't have to live with the family and could live there, but they were so close in the same, you know, adjacency. And then we could have that 80 to 120 AMI so that people who were making it out of the 60% could still live in their same community or at least close enough to be part of it. I mean, that would be my kind of dream project, would be able to use mixed income, mixed use communities. And I would even love them to have businesses within there and family owned businesses and, sure, you know, what I call affordable business, not just affordable housing. But this would be, you know, ideal in my mind to be able to do that.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, you know.
Wait, hold on, Vlad. Before we switch gears, I just want to say this, because what we've just described in our last part of this conversation kind of goes back to Joy, who was in first grade, creating that little community plan for what a city should look like, you know. So I'm getting closer to what first grade Joy was really interested in back then. So I just wanted to say that it does indeed get back to my roots, so to speak.
Yeah, and I totally see that, and I also appreciate the fact that you're, you know, exploring that, because it doesn't end with just one project, and then
that's
on,
right,
to the next one. It is about the community, really. So if we can switch gears now, I would like to get a little bit of a perspective on sort of the state of the affordable housing industry, if you will. I know clearly, you know, during, you know, COVID and with sort of, you know, recent interest rates, you know, challenges, it's been a, you know, challenge like anywhere else to raise funds and figure out, you know, who is going to be able to help you build these, you know, developments. I am curious sort of how do things look like in 2024? You know, I can't imagine it's any easier, but you know, what are some areas of, you know, opportunity or maybe some hopeful signs of things that you can tell us about?
Well, I think we're in much better shape now. What was the challenge of forecasting pricing and being financed at original levels of a pro forma before knowing there was going to be a COVID has caused anybody who went into to building and developing pre-COVID, it led to unreal. I mean, their financial performance just couldn't be right, because who would have known that steel or wood was going to go as high as it did, or that there wouldn't be any staff, or, I mean, these are just things you can't even imagine. You can't even forecast for something like that things would double and triple or wouldn't be available at all. And the longer you wait when you're in construction, the more expensive that thing becomes, because days are going by in the financing world. So, but now in 2024, anything that's going forward now, there is more stability. There's more of an understanding of where we are. And I think that the fact that we didn't have inflation and that this was something everybody was predicting, but it didn't really happen, I think this makes it, it's never easy, Vlad. I'm not,
yeah,
saying it's easy, but it makes it easier.
Right.
It's never easy, okay? It just isn't. But it makes it easier in terms of being able to forecast and being able to know what your cost is going to be and where you're going with your next development. So I think there's a lot more in the stability of that. And that makes it easier. And I'm looking forward, believe me, I'm looking forward to that. Because that's just one of those things. You know, I also, I had the joy, you'll pardon my pun, I had the joy of developing right when the world economic crisis happened. So, I mean, I'll tell you, I have been through crises that nobody could believe could possibly happen. And yet it didn't just happen in one place. It happened around the world. And that's what makes, you know, we're all related, so clear. It's not just something that happens in one place. I mean, when we're going to have a crisis, my God, we're going to have it all over the world. And that's something that really bears some looking at in terms of how we see each other and how we see the world. We're not alone in this, and we never are.
Right, right. As you know, look at 2024 and beyond, what are some of the big goals for the organization?
The goals that we have, and we have, like I was talking to you about the multiple divisions, we have an energy division. I think we will likely look ahead and do solar panel installs. And I mean, we will get deeper and deeper into the technology of energy efficiency, which we are set and primed to be in right now. We do weatherization. We're doing all of those kinds of things. So that's part of the organization. I think the property management will also see an expansion of bringing both our residential services from Impact. We'll see those work more hand in hand as we develop that. And I think that will become an arm of something we'll do, not just for our own communities, but for others, because we do excel with that. And I think that we will see partnerships, and I had been talking a little bit earlier about, with other nonprofits, in order to look at how we handle some senior issues with PACE programs and other things that we can avail ourselves together in a partnership from the federal government funds that have been identified for handling some of this. And ultimately, that mixed use, mixed income property that I want to see some home ownership. I want to see some ability to create fully vetted out communities that are developed to really meet people's needs as they move into more equitable places. So that's what I see our future is. I think we'll do more development here in the Coachella Valley, because anybody looking at what we've done, surely I've had a lot of calls. We really want to work with you, and that's nice. They know that we're doing something very different and innovative, and I think we will remain that innovative organization that large organizations don't have the flexibility or the nimbleness to be able to do that we are able to do.
Yeah. As we close our conversation, Joy, one of the questions I love asking is, some advice either to your younger self or advice for people that want to get more involved in this industry. You know, what would be things that you would like to tell them that they should carry throughout their path?
Well, considering my opening about me being 3 and 6, I'd say it's very important. From my perspective, if they're interested in this kind of industry where they want to make a difference, is not to lose the dream, the idealism, and the vision of being able to make change. Because sometimes we look at something and, you know, you can be told no, 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 and then you get that one yes, and it makes it all possible, and the whole world can change in that moment. So I would say to somebody who wants to be part of this industry, you have to be able to do it for the reason, the mission reason. And I've always been mission driven. That's what's important to me. And so those people who want to get in, just hang on to that vision and that mission and look for the organization, not just to be recruited by the organization, but you need to recruit the organization you want to work in. And that's what I would tell somebody who is interested in being in this business, and also to my younger self. I never knew that there was a job like this, but I would just say keep dreaming those big dreams, because, you know, they are motivating factors in being able to accomplish things that are important to society as a whole.
Yeah, I love that. That's really great advice. Joy, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Really appreciated it. Stay well and keep us posted on any new updates with the organization.
I'll do that. And Vlad, thank you for the opportunity to speak on my favorite subject this morning.
That was another episode of the Real Perspectives podcast, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to it. Conversations like these help us comprehend our evolving industry better and hopefully provide a perspective that helps you understand the dynamics of commercial real estate. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our show and tell your colleagues about it. That is the best way to spread the news and help us remain relevant across the industry. Cheers.